in a culture that's kind of built on separation. How we live in a culture that's built on hyper-individualism, that's built on this idea that, you know, again, humans in the natural world are somehow not the same thing. And to give you an example of how deep that really is, I was in Montreal at the Biodome about a year ago, and they had this big sign up, which just struck me. And they said, humans and the natural world are on a collision course. And I was just blown away seeing this sign, because it isn't accurate. Humans in the natural world are not on a collision course. Humans are the natural world. That is us. We are nature. You know, are we creating a whole lot of problems? Absolutely, yes. Like, there's no doubt about that. But the framing, even within environmental spaces, even within sometimes climate activism, that, well, we need to save the world, is somehow steeped in our separation. And this really coming back and actually...
Namaste, beautiful souls. I'm Shilpa, and you're tuned into the Omni Mindfulness Podcast, a sanctuary for spiritual entrepreneurs. As a holistic mindfulness coach and social marketing strategist, I'm here to guide you on a transformative journey. On this show, we explore captivating stories and provide practical tools that deepen your connection with your authentic self. Through the personal and professional narratives of remarkable individuals, we expand our consciousness and ignite the spark of possibility. Each season, I curate content that empowers you to create a holistic lifestyle encompassing spirituality, mindfulness, energy awareness, and mindset. Join me as we engage in conversations with experts in their respective fields and share solo casts from yours truly, all aimed at supporting you and relaxing, revitalizing, resetting your body, mind, and spirit. I'm your host and the visionary behind Omni Mindfulness. So what if just one story had the power to shift the trajectory of your life? What if you could become an instrument in helping others realize their true selves? And what if your soul's higher purpose lies in experiencing the joy of Omni Mindfulness? Remember, it's never too late to rewrite your story. My next guest is the inspiring Laura Hartley, returning to the Omni Mindfulness Podcast. Laura is an activist, coach, and founder of Public Love Enterprises, an online school empowering change makers to radically reimagine the world. She's fascinated by the connections between inner and outer change, helping people get free from capitalism and oppressive systems. Laura runs programs on healing burnout culture, regenerative leadership, and finding your purpose in a changing world. Today, she'll share how we can become a catalyst for change by courageously redesigning our lives in harmony with nature. And now, here is Laura.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I really enjoyed our conversation from the January podcast, and I felt there was a great segue to this month's theme, which is unveiling mindful connections. And essentially really thinking about it in terms of our connection to the earth, but, you know, all around us, the planets. And before I hit record, I was sharing with you that when we talk about cycles, and you've talked about in the past, I had the revelation that at different points in my life when I've hit burnout, which was a good segue for this one, I haven't been paying attention to cycles of the earth. And honoring my connection to the earth and earth awareness is all sort of tied together. But somehow when we are disconnected is when we start feeling a sense of, I would say, anxiety and overwhelm also.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we're very disconnected as a culture, as a species now. You know, I actually think we have a core belief in our separation as well that leads to so many of the crises that we're experiencing today. I think separation is at the heart of the climate crisis, the idea that humans are not a part of the natural world. You can see it with the idea that we're separated from each other, that what affects you somehow doesn't affect me and vice versa. And you see horrible policies coming out of that. And we have this disconnection from our hearts and from what matters to us. And so when we can start to actually see that everything in the world is connected, that our actions matter, our hearts matter, our values, our thoughts, our feelings all matter, and that everything in this world is also happening in seasons and in cycles, right? That there's a time for winter, there's a time for summer, there's a time and a cycle with moon and the tides and our bodies and our rhythms, then there's a whole new perspective that can come out of that. One that's much more connected and much more regenerative in nature.
Absolutely. And I would think of it as an embodiment of our understanding of who we are as a being. If we are connected with cycles, and let's say we are connected to the moon and all the different planets, then who are we really? Why have an individualistic mindset when really the big problem for our generation right now, like the climate crisis, is a crisis and something that connects all of us?
It is. But, you know, we live in a culture that's kind of built on separation. We live in a culture that's built on hyper-individualism, that's built on this idea that, you know, again, humans in the natural world are somehow not the same thing. And to give you an example of how deep that really is, I was in Montreal at the Biodome about a year ago, and they had this big sign up, which just struck me. And they said, humans and the natural world are on a collision course. And I was just blown away seeing this sign, because it isn't accurate. Humans in the natural world are not on a collision course. Humans are the natural world. That is us. We are nature. You know, are we creating a whole lot of problems? Absolutely, yes. Like, there's no doubt about that. But the framing, even within environmental spaces, even within sometimes climate activism, that, well, we need to save the world, is somehow steeped in our separation. And this really coming back and actually saying, well, that separation isn't real. It's an illusion. It's also a cultural illusion, and one that we've developed very highly that not every culture has to the extent that we do, is something that I think is one of the most powerful steps that we can actually take in starting to look at how we address these crises.
Yeah, interesting you should bring up the fact that not all cultures feel or behave and function on that level. I am aware that, like, the American Indians, they live in the environment in which they would be, I would say, navigating through. And when they would leave one area, they would leave it the way they found it and honoring that space. And I don't think that is necessarily what we see in modern, what people call progress these days.
No. You know, many Indigenous cultures have had a much deeper connection to the land, to the waterways, to the natural world that they lived within. And I think that's something that I think all of us can cultivate, because we're all human. We're all part of this natural, beautiful world. But it kind of develops a practice, I think, particularly when we live in cities. And I say that I live in a high rise in the middle of the downtown core. Okay, so, like, you need a practice around this. To really return and say, hey, no, like, this is it. This is life. We're all here. We're all choosing how we want to make this world, that this world that we've built is just a product of imagination, and that we can redesign it. We can reimagine it. And what actually feels good and authentic and true when I return to the spaces that are instinctive to life?
It's interesting. Again, I always say it's interesting because I'm always tuning in to something you've said that makes me think of a concept about the topic of the month. And when you said it can be built in our imagination, based on our imagination. I'm playing this game with my son on his iPad for the last several months, where we get to pick an island and build it the way we want it. And it's so funny because there are rules. And one of the rules in the island is, I want nothing but just dirt roads, and everything is very tribal and farmland. And the rules will say, well, you've got too many humans here. Now you need a factory. Now you need this. You know, you need that. I'm like, oh, I don't want to build more.
Exactly. And those rules are arbitrary. They're not, I mean, they're rules that are embedded into the game, but they're rules that humans created. And this is really interesting because this is kind of what we do to the world. The world is made by what we imagine. We often have this expression, oh, it's just the way the world is. It's just the way life is. It's completely untrue. Okay. The world and life is whatever we want to make it collectively. But we put these limitations on ourselves and say, oh, well, that could never happen, or the city could never be this way, or people will never change. And all of these ideas keep the world fixed as it is. I actually think they're almost by design because they uphold the power structures exactly as they are. But there's a freedom that comes in saying, hey, well, actually, what if I didn't? What if I didn't have to put that factory in just because the rule says so? You know, what if I could actually put plants everywhere and trees everywhere? What if we could cycle and have less cars? What if we had more music and space for artists? Like, what if we put street art on every corner? There's so many different things that we could start to imagine. But we need to let go of that idea that things have to be a certain way, because they don't.
That is so powerful, especially the imagination part, because I, again, being disconnected, we've talked about humans in modern day society being disconnected. Having faith and trust and the ability to imagine is something we've become disconnected with.
It is, you know, and this, I think this inherent sense of trust is challenging, because I think sometimes we talk about trust, we also assume, well, everything's going to work out fine. And I think when we're talking about the context of the climate crisis, there isn't that guarantee. We're very far from that guarantee. And so I suppose what I am interested in terms of the climate crisis is, how do we make meaning in this time? How do we start to trust ourselves to be resilient and resourceful and capable and creative, that we can have the skills that we need to not only move through the crises that we're a part of, to, I don't want to say end because they're already here, and so limit the potential that could come from them, but also to trust ourselves enough to love through this time, to stay open, to stay human, to create something beautiful, even when something else is crumbling.
Sounds also like what you're saying, Laura, is that as we work through our ability to recognize what we can impact for the climate crisis and imagine what is possible, it's also it's a period where I feel like all of us, or many of us, are challenged with the ability of saying, can we shift our thinking on every level? It's not just about, oh, the earth and how we engage with the earth, and oh, it's just about recycling. Like you were saying, though, what if we could reimagine how art is done, reimagine how gardening is done? I mentioned to you in our last podcast that there are empty lands pieces, not large ones, because it's mostly all built out in this area. But every time I walk past those little pieces of land in our neighborhood, I'm thinking, well, it's been empty for years. Why can't we just have a little communal garden there?
Exactly. And these are really valid points, though. Like, we should be able to. I mean, there's issues sometimes, like you need to test soil and all of these things, but these things can be done. They're solvable problems. Yeah. When we're looking at the climate crisis, it's easy to see it as just a crisis of energy. And that is such a big part of it. You know, fossil fuels, oil, gas, coal, all of this needs to be transformed. But it's also, you know, it's a crisis of agriculture, of transportation. It's a spiritual crisis at its essence, because it is a crisis of disconnection. And so it's an invitation for us to reimagine the way in which we live. And I am a firm believer that we do need everybody, right? We need artists in this time. That is a really valuable space to be in. It's a valuable vocation. You know, we need farmers in the cities as well as outside of them. You know, we need accountants, we need lawyers. Whatever it is that we do in this world, there is something that we can be doing to make it better within that vocation, within that profession, within the skill set that we have. So it's not just for somebody else out there. It's really for going into our hearts and saying, well, what makes meaning of my life?
And I think as a solopreneur, and just tying it back to the spiritual approach to things, our opportunity, it may be a challenge, but our opportunity also is that whatever we do, however we do it, it is an opportunity to move the needle forward. And I don't have the right word for it, because if we're connected to the earth, if we're connected to the moon, we're connected to the cycles, there's no us and them. It's not out there. It's how to sustain or enhance the quality of all sentient beings.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, so if we're looking from this perspective of being a solopreneur or being an entrepreneur, I actually think there's one of the most valuable things we can do in this time. And we're looking in the context of the climate crisis. One, because we can embed our values into everything that we do. And that means embedding our values into our operations, our sales, our marketing, our strategy, into every level, that we need to live those values. And most business doesn't do this. Most business is based on, like, you know, bottom line, profit. Even when they call it the triple bottom line, they still mostly care about profit. And so this is really looking at, well, profit matters. It does. You deserve to earn a living. You deserve to flourish. But also, hey, what about justice? What about, you know, speaking up? What about compassion? What about embedding these valid feminist principles into all that we're doing? That's a power move in this time that is absolutely necessary. I think it's also about recognizing, yeah, hey, like, the world around us is rapidly changing. And to actually go within and to say, and have the courage within ourselves to say, this is what I want to do. This is work that I love. This is work that helps people. This is work that I can trust myself to do, and that I can trust myself to build a business out of. That's incredibly necessary and powerful in this time.
And having a camaraderie and support through this connection, like I have with you in the podcast, it's a platform that's become so strong. And there's so many people like us who are using their voice to make that shift.
Yeah. And this support network, I think, as well, like this community of people is also part of building the new world. You know, when we're looking at change making, there's three kind of distinct areas that we can look at. We have disruption, which is what you see a lot of frontline activists, grassroots activism, lawyers, journalism, really good at, like, shining a light on injustice, highlighting the problems that we're facing. You have healing and aiding, which is a lot of healers, a lot of medical workers, volunteers, conservationists, a lot of nonprofits. They're all helping people who are impacted. But we also have building, right? This is about building the structures and the systems and the businesses that stand when so much of the world falls, when so much of it changes around us. And so this and this building community, creating these platforms to talk about things, to say, well, hey, this is happening, and what's my role in this, and how can I start to be a part of building something better? That's what this is about. That's a really important place.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what this is about. Like, I've been trying to, like, wrap my head around, is it called climate crisis? Is it about the earth alone? It's Earth Awareness Month. However, it should always be Earth Awareness Month, I'm given. However, if we're going to dedicate a month to it, let's think about it on a bigger scale. What is it? Whatever this thing is that we're trying to enhance or improve or save.
Yeah. Well, and the climate crisis doesn't exist in a vacuum either, right? Like, it intersects with every other crisis and every other injustice that we have today. You cannot separate the climate crisis completely from white supremacy, from racism. You cannot separate it from patriarchy. You can't separate it from the economic system that we all live in. You can't separate it from war and the military industrial complex either. Okay. So there are all of these different threads to it that need to be unraveled. And so whatever space it is that we're working in, whether it's a spiritual space that's about connection, about love, about living our values and finding purpose and meaning, whether it is a space that's really looking at injustice and how we can do things better, whether it's helping and teaching others, all of these are threads that need to be pulled on. There is no one single work needed for the climate crisis. There is no one single solution. There are thousands of them, millions of them, and we need everybody doing their part, whatever it may be.
Hey there, sweet souls. If you're finding value in this episode, I'd be so honored if you could take a moment to share it with that one person you know it would truly serve. And here's some exciting news. My podcast, Omni Mindfulness, was recently ranked in the top 10% globally by ListenScore. It's all thanks to your amazing support and listenership. So let's spread the love and wisdom together. Thank you for being a part of my mindfulness community. Sending you lots of love and light, Mrs. Shilpa.
Yes, everybody's doing their part. And that is such a good point that you made, because when people may be hearing about, and I can be, maybe I've been that naive, like, oh, Earth awareness, then you think, okay, it has to be an activist. No, it does not have to be an activist. And it could be an accountant doing their role with the attitude and intention that they're aligned with their core values.
Absolutely. And also starting to, again, reimagine their profession. Like, what is it that we're actually measuring? And why are we measuring that? Like, this is really important in our culture. We measure profit as the most important thing, or gross domestic product as the most important thing. And instead saying, well, actually, how would I maybe start to add in factors of well-being, or, company satisfaction, or, sure, we're like, maybe we're kind of sustainable, or we're marketing ourselves as sustainable, but are we actually maybe giving more to the earth than we're taking? Could we start to get that angle? There's just so many different lenses that we can bring to deepen the work that we're already doing. So it all comes back to, I think, that first stage of, what is my relationship to the crisis? What do I feel when I think about it? Am I considering the ways in which I perhaps ignore it, or the ways in which I participate in it? And am I considering all the different ways that I can use my life, my work, my profession, my community, whatever it might be, to just plant seeds of imagination, seeds of something different, and say, but what if we did this? And I think that's the space that we can all begin.
Let's start with the what ifs. Absolutely. There have been so many what ifs that you and I have even entertained over the podcast conversations. Like, what if we can reimagine local space? What if we can reimagine the way we view art and the role of art? All of that. I mentioned to you last time that I have a friend call out for her artwork is Alexandra, and she goes to the Amazon forest or rainforest and collects different seeds, acai seeds and different things. They look like it could be, things that one should not be making jewelry out of, like the tusk, the elephant tusks. And she makes them into ornate, beautiful jewelry, bright, vibrant colors. And that is her passion. That is what she does. And what if we gave more attention to those who are doing that, and they're also bringing joy to others?
Yeah, absolutely. So this space again of like, well, where are we giving our attention, our energy, our money? Like, these are all spaces that matter. It's very easy to feel powerless in the face of the climate crisis. That I think that's one of the things that makes it so difficult to start to take action about, because the problem is so big. It's so multifaceted. There's so much invested in keeping the world the same that is also designed to make you feel powerless. But this isn't true. We all have agency. We all have power. And even very simple things like that about, where are we spending our money? Are we giving it, to Amazon? Or are we giving it to like this small, beautiful solopreneurs who we love and care about and who we want to succeed? That is a space that matters, and that all starts to have an impact.
I was just wondering if that's been the same blueprint or formula for activists that I have admired, like Mahatma Gandhi. And in his time, he had that mill to create cloth from cotton, and he wanted the locals to utilize the cotton and make their own clothing, so they weren't being dependent on the British and that system and cycle. And what's interesting is my grandmother was part of that revolution with Gandhi, and I would hear stories and wonder, wow, what was it like to be a part of something that shifted? And so it's the same formula. Like, what if we made these conscious choices?
Well, it actually is. And this is a really interesting perspective, because I think in some sense, the way movements operate now has changed to the past, meaning in the past that very often you had movements with a single leader, whether it was Gandhi, whether it was Martin Luther King, so many you can look back and you can see like a very distinct figurehead who was incredible and inspirational, but also who operated all of these kind of local initiatives that rippled out. And movements today don't seem to have that leader as much. They're much more decentralized. But there's actually that idea of, well, localization and bringing things back is still there. So when we're looking at the climate crisis, hey, what can we do in our community right here, right? Whether we, you know, we can ask for permission, we can lobby for permission, we can do all of that, but also we can work with our neighbors to say, what do we need? What resources do we have? What skills do we have? How can we start to really come together in the space that we're in and create the tools that we need to survive the future that also take the money and the resources and the power away from the larger corporations and from the larger systems that are harming this planet and harming life itself?
Yes. So whether it's the food and the source of your food, the type of food, how you are traveling. I mean, not all of us have, if it was up to me, we would have solar panels. We can't afford it, but you do what you can.
Yeah. Look, I mean, all of this comes with a degree of privilege, right? That we, and it's also wrapped up within this idea of environmentalism. It's also this idea of perfectionism that, well, we should be able to do it all, right? That I should have the solar panels. I should be zero waste. Okay. There should be not an ounce of plastic in this house. I should be cycling everywhere or using the public transport. I shouldn't be flying. I should never eat meat. And these things, I think, all becomes overwhelming because nobody can do that. Years ago, before I got deeply involved in climate activism, when I was really focused on individual solutions, I tried to do all of this. You know, I was really like, whenever I missed it, my keep cup and I used a coffee cup, I felt so guilty. You know, I was so conscious about recycling and separating everything, and that stuff matters. But none of us can do the individual actions enough alone to actually fix the crisis that we're in. Okay, it's great. We should do what we can. But this isn't about perfection. It is about what can we actually do? What is accessible? What can we reach for? Where can we reach a little bit further? And how can we work with our community, with the people around us? Because collective change is really what we need, right? That idea, as you were saying, about bringing people together to say, hey, how can we do this? Us, the people that matter, that's going to be impacted by this, and not just outsource it somewhere else.
And I think that really just ties in so well with this overall kind of, well, how can I be the catalyst goal for the climate crisis? And I think that what you've answered is just, there's a multifaceted way to do it, but also you don't need to get burnt out on it. You don't need to get overwhelmed. Like you were saying, recycling, there have been many days where I'll be cleaning containers and I have to recycle and clean everything and put it in a recycling bin. And I still do it, but sometimes I reach burnout.
But then the reality is that recycling that we can be so dedicated about separating is still going into landfill. That very much happens within Australia. There was large amounts of plastic that was supposed to be recycled that gets shipped to Indonesia to go into landfill, or it gets shipped to another country. And this happens all around the world. So no matter how much we do as individuals, it's not quite enough. So like, that work matters. It's not to discount that. We absolutely should be doing that as much as we can. And it feels great to do it because we're living our values. It's a good thing. But we also need to just bring it back to, okay, well, if I can take that weight off my shoulders, that I don't need to be perfect here. I don't need to be flawless in order to act. I don't need to never use a single-use coffee cup, or, you know, never, you know, always have solar panels on my house before I start to talk to others about the crisis and what they're doing and what we could do together. Take that off. It's not true. The catalyst really is about having the courage to start to look at, well, what is the crisis? What are we facing? What's actually going to happen over the next 10 years, 15 years? This isn't a crisis that's 100 years away. This is a crisis that's here now. What would it mean to become resilient and resourceful? And just start talking with others, start the conversations, see what happens out of them.
Well, I'm tuning into the term, the catalyst is to have courage.
Yeah, the catalyst is to have courage. Because you know what? Facing this crisis requires courage. Like, I honestly think that it is, when you look at the science behind it and of what we're expecting and what we're on track for and how little we're doing, it can be terrifying. And that terrifying can quickly become overwhelm It can become this feeling of being frozen or stuck and, well, what am I supposed to do? I'm one person. We need to learn to move through that, to feel that, but then to move through it and then to talk to others and to have the courage to face this and to say, well, hey, it's happening whether I acknowledge it or not. So how can I create my community, my life, my workplace, my family to be the most resourceful, resilient, imaginative space that they can be to confront what we're actually going through?
I love it. And it can only do good for those who have different opinions of on the climate crisis versus those of us who feel there is an issue that we want to work on. We're still putting our values and alignment into something that will only enhance the life of all sentient beings.
There is nothing bad that comes out of clean air, green energy, connection to the earth, connection to each other, that a just transition that allows jobs for everybody. There is no bad thing that comes out of this. There is only good.
Absolutely, Laura. Well, I may have to have you back again this year because I just love our conversations. So much value. And I feel like so many nuggets. Is there anything you want to share, or do you feel like you shared the essence of your message?
I think just that now is the time, right? It's we can keep putting this off, but like whatever it is that you feel called to do in relation to this crisis, no matter how big or how small, now is the time. Plant those seeds, start today.
I love it. And you have more materials that people can reference in the show notes?
I do. So on my website, you can find a free guide that is a whole list of climate actions at the level of the individual and spiritual, the level of community, and even the level of world, starting to look at our economic system. So you can download that for free. I also run a 12-week inner leadership course called Cultural Wayfinding, which is all about moving from the world as it is to the world as it could be. So if you're a change maker, if you want to help create a better world, that is the course for you.
I love it, Laura. And I love our conversations, and I will continue doing my part as well and learning from you. Thank you so much for being here today.
Ah, thank you for having me and for having this really important show. I so value it. Thank you.
I value you. Have a great day.
Thanks for tuning in, sweet soul. If you've enjoyed this episode, I would be so grateful for your kind review on Apple Podcast. Simply click on the link in the show notes to leave your lovely feedback and uplift our spirits. Your support means the world to me and helps our show thrive. So please show me your love and continue to practice Omni Mindfulness.